www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
We had gotten some instant reports from the police and from some cameras that we were immediately starting to pull that looked like one individual got out of the car. I got in touch with my squad specifically and said, all right, we have a manhunt. Yeah, it's a manhunt now. We do this better than anybody.
Dick Wolf returns to the nonfiction space with Inside the FBI New York, and my guest and I return to those stupid, drunk days of yesteryear with Campus PD. This is episode 7 of The Blotter Presents. Hello, everybody. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, your desk sergeant up in this hoosegow. It's another episode of The Blotter Presents, and I am here with my real-life partner in crime, Dan Patrick Brady. Hi, honey.
Hi, honey.
Yeah, this is weird. We're upstairs, downstairs, literally in our home. And now Dan knows what I mean when I refer to mysterious technical problems. Welcome back, everybody, and welcome back, Dick Wolf, to the nonfiction reality space with Inside the FBI New York. This is not to be confused with whatever true crime Menendez-y thing he's doing later this year. But in this week's Most Wanted segment, we're talking about Inside the FBI on USA Network. The first thing to know is that while these are not exactly their stories, we do have a familiar sounding guy on the soundtrack. Let's listen to a clip of good old Steve Zernkilton.
All parties are innocent until proven guilty.
So that's a sign of quality, but overall the show feels, while interesting, not essential. Dan, on a scale of 1 to Great British Bake Off, how likely are you to watch this reality show again?
I would watch it again. My feeling was that it was, there was no true sense of direction to where it was going, but it did hook me enough that I would love to see what they're going to follow this up with. It had me involved. It was really kind of funny. Even though this is looking back on leading up to New Year's Eve 2016, and I know nothing happened in New York City in 2016 on New Year's Eve, there was still a moment of relaxation when the ball dropped and no national catastrophe had occurred.
So, yeah, when they set off the giant confetti cannon.
Yes.
Actually jumped a little, but you're right. It did create tension effectively. And I did learn some new things, like they were talking about the Pathfinder potential car bomb that, I guess, where was that left? Times Square or Grand Central?
Right. No, that was in Times Square.
Right. So the FBI recreated this car bomb right down to all the cars around it and every little, like, clock face and random screw in this IED. And the explosion was really serious and shocking. And so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it would have seriously messed up a block of Times Square.
And so that one agent had that very evocative and scary description of what it would have done to people's internal organs who were within 100 feet of it that I'm not sure I totally needed
in terms of getting
to sleep.
And also he conjured up the image of shattering glass, which is something you don't necessarily think about, but all those buildings around there have a huge amount of windows and stuff like that in them, and they would have just showered glass everywhere. So even if you weren't within that blast radius, you could have been seriously hurt.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I changed my mind. I was going to say that this show is maybe not essential, especially since it seems like there are 88 shows exactly like it on Netflix, on Discovery, on the History Channel. But this one is quite, quite well made, and they did manage to make these events compelling, even though you are talking about things that happened 12 to 18 months ago. They also have an episode coming up called Gangs and Gangsters that I'm pretty into because I think that's going to be a flashback to the like 80s heyday of Rudy Giuliani and busting the mob.
And it also might forward to the latest problems on Long Island with the what is MS-13, forgetting the name suddenly of the group, but there is some major gang activity and it's all changing and stuff like that. So maybe it'll lead to that. That would be kind of.
Yeah, I really did get a sense. They referred sort of obliquely to the fact that NYPD has been obliged to develop its own counterterrorism force, which occasionally you read a New York Magazine article that, excuse me, is a little tisk-tisky about that, but which I personally feel is smart under the circumstances. But that's also to support, not explicitly to support the FBI, but these special agents were talking quite a bit about just how much the FBI is responsible for, that it's not just domestic investigations, it's international prevention. Like they're doing parts of the CIA's job, the NSA's job, the Department of Homeland Security's job. So yeah, that was...
That was an interesting little section where they were suddenly following this man and they discovered him and they discovered some cohorts. And then in real time, they were notifying the CIA. They were notifying the National Security Council and stuff like that. So that they were literally, it appeared on the show at least, to be then attacking places in the Middle East that were connected to these guys. I found that to be kind of very interesting and threatening as all get out. Because, I mean, this show brought up one real interesting thing to me, which is that we're constantly being surveilled today. It was amazing that they found someone that they wanted to follow, and that they immediately were able to check up on social media, bring up all of his previous writings and stuff like that, and then locate him, locate people he was with, describe the people, find out whether they were threats or not, and all of this appeared, at least on the television show, to happen extremely quickly, which suddenly makes me think that it's great that we have this capacity for good, but what if it's somehow turned around in some way? I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but...
You're the munch to my fin.
Yeah, yes. I mean, where does it begin and end, you know?
Well, that was an interesting sequence because you did have, I think, ASAC talking about how they tracked this guy down. I believe he was a Libyan national whose visa had expired. And they're talking... pretty positively about how the information that he's giving them is being flowed into the next room by two dudes from other agencies, or ladies also, I'm sure, analysts who are using this information to, it was strongly implied, send a drone right over the village where this guy trained with ISIS to blow it the fuck up.
Right.
You know, not that I have a problem with blowing ISIS the fuck up, but... I'm not like a real time stream of information like that from a quote unquote bad actor like this guy, which may not be reliable intel. I mean, I'm sure the timeline we saw was not realistic. We weren't exactly told that they blew this village the fuck up. They just showed footage of a drone over. It could have been anywhere. Could have been fucking Shaker Heights. I don't know. And I also couldn't really decide if the show thought that was a good thing or not. Could you?
No, but I think that's one thing I liked about the show is that you mentioned the narrator at the very beginning. There was some voiceover sometimes to recap when you came back from a commercial or something like that, but it wasn't on any kind of scale like it normally is with with a lot of these dramatizations and with some documentaries that
or like Sheriff
watch.
John Bunnell, who's like, these crooks learned the hard right, way. Right, like anyone right. who ever even thought about voting for a Democrat is, you know, scathed.
But I liked it because, and this goes back to the first thing I said, I liked it because it wasn't, I didn't feel I was being directed as a viewer, you know? I felt that I was, it was kind of open in terms of here's this information and we're now heading into the story, but we're not directing you down a certain path. We're not going to make you think a certain thing necessarily. I liked that about it, which made me curious as about what's going to be coming up. Because I did not get a sense from this show, at least the stuff we saw last night. I haven't read anything about the show, about the plans of the show. But I didn't get a sense of where all this was going. So if they're going to now switch to something else and show us something entirely differently, that's actually fine with me. You know?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm also okay with seeing the you know, more counter-terror focus as sure. well. And I think that I'm not sure what they did behind the scenes, but I did feel often in these shows when they first start out, the law enforcement people in front of the camera seem very aware of the camera. This felt very natural and like they were just doing their jobs.
Yeah.
But one of the agents that we spent a fair amount of time with, I think can sort of put a button on this conversation because he's expressing, while he's talking about the frustration that he's seeing via pundits on TV about specifically the San Bernardino shooting and how, you know, why couldn't the FBI stop that? They're always listening to us. And then his own frustration with their limitations because we can't predict that kind of thing. I think that this is a good clip to kind of end on to look at the show and how it tries, I think, to balance, you know, our trust and admiration for the FBI versus what they actually have to deal with. So let's listen to clip three.
Family, I feel for the FBI, and you listen to the pundits on the news, you know, why did the FBI know? You know, they're on our phones, they're listening to our conversations. How come they didn't know about these two individuals? And said, today's my day. The man and his wife said, you know, they drop off the baby with mom and kisses them like nothing's going on. They go to their car, they pick up their weapons, and they just start killing people. There's no way to predict that.
Well, I responded to that segment by saying, well, there's probably a way. But then you thought that that would be a good clip for us to include. Why is that?
Well, I took him totally at his word. I'm sorry. I do remember reading about this in the paper and everything like that. How do I preface this by not sounding too political? But we're basically being told these days that the evil is coming, and it is evil, and it's coming all from over the border and coming in, stuff like that. These people have been in the United States for years and years. You know, they had lives. They went and they shut up. Was it the woman's workplace? I mean, there's no way of knowing necessarily what turns the switch. There's no way of knowing what makes Adam Lanza suddenly go and shoot up all these people in a grade school. It's asking too much for us to expect law enforcement to be able to predict these sort of things. And actually, I'm fearful if law enforcement could predict that, because I think that means that we're living in a society where you have zero freedom at all. Everyone's constantly being surveilled, and they basically know your thoughts. Suddenly, it's Minority Report.
Yeah, you know? that's reference I was going to make too.
I don't know if that's necessarily a world I want to live in, because quite frankly, at work sometimes I want to kill people too. I don't act on it, I know, but I mean, the thought does certainly occur to me. I just, I mean, I feel for
well, I mean, how many times have I seen you off to work in the morning by cheerily being like, don't kill ex coworker today. Good job, honey.
Yeah, good job.
I mean, if our house were bugged, we'd both be locked up.
Well, that's kind of true anyway. I feel for people who are in law enforcement or something like that the one thing about these gentlemen, their dedication, and women that were on the show, is their dedication to their job seemed to me to be honest and real and 100%. And they must feel a frustration out of this world when a catastrophe happened, you know? And I'm sure that this occurs to them all the time, which is, I mean, we just can't be everywhere at every moment, you know? I mean, so my heart kind of goes out to them for that regard, you know?
Well, yeah, so let's keep watching, because I'm interested to see how this tension between trying to solve a crime and trying to respect the rights of citizens plays out when the FBI is looking at more traditional crimes. And I'm interested to see, obviously, if they get into any like forgery stuff, because I love that. So yeah, thank you for watching this with me. And for all of you who had not caught up with it yet, it's in reruns pretty much constantly on the USA Network at the moment. But you can find it airing new episodes at 10 p.m. on Thursdays. Once again, that's on USA, and it's Inside the FBI, New York. And now for something completely different and much less dignified. Our cold case topic this week is Campus PD. Yeah. I just never get sick of it, even the episodes that I've seen before. Dan, do you remember how we even discovered this show?
I was very late at night. One evening, we were kind of like clicking through channels and came across it. I think that's where it was.
I think we watched it fairly late. There were four seasons in total. I believe the show originally ran on G4, and it's gone back into reruns on Spike late at night. They tend to run a block starting at 11:30. If you want to set your DVR for that. There are a few episodes rattling around on YouTube, but the episode that we saw featured a guy at Montclair State University in Jersey. We've never seen it again, but he was so sarcastic and hilarious while not being all that rude to his constituents. And I've just never forgotten that guy. And a lot of the cops are like that. I think my favorite is the redheaded lady police officer in Cincinnati.
Yeah. She's kind of hilarious because she's not, I mean, she is in no way kind of polished or anything like that, or in any way kind of a station above the people that she is dealing with on a day-to-day basis. It's not like she's looking down on them. It's just like, I mean, the great thing about Campus PD, first of all, for me, is the fact that it's really not dangerous. You know, it's not, all this stuff happens on a campus. 99.9% of it deals with not very intelligent people being all the stupider because they are very, very drunk. And that's basically what you're going to see. You're not going to see anything where anyone's life is necessarily threatened. You're not going to see that much anger on the show.
Occasionally, going to see some little shitburger 20-year-old yes. Who's like, do you have a warrant? And the cops being like, we're not required to respond to a complaint of excessive noise and underage drinking with a warrant, douche. And then sometimes they really get up in their faces like, it's interesting to watch it now. The show was produced, I think, starting in 2009. So it's not like super vintage, but it's before I think we were as aware as, for instance, you and I were while watching live PD last night, of the tension that any person of color immediately feels when they're interfacing with the police.
That's very true. I mean, one other thing that it's fairly rare to actually see as I'm running through episodes in my brain and talking about it. I don't, except for just a few episodes, it was primarily dealing with drunk white kids at colleges, predominantly white colleges, I assume. It was not dealing with that much with people of color. And one gentleman who was, I think, very, let's say, sarcastic in his responses to the police and stuff like that, happened to be a gentleman of color. And what we've seen that, I have seen the episode twice, and I saw it when we were first watching many years ago, now probably 2013 or something?
Yeah, sounds about right.
And then we saw it maybe last week or something like that. And in 2013, it just had not hit me, even though I lived through the Rodney King riots and stuff like that, and was shocked by that. It just had not hit me until the whole Black Lives Matter thing began in Ferguson, what it might truly be like for a person of color to be dealing with the police. And so when I first saw the episode with this guy, he just seemed pretty sarcastic, kind of difficult to deal with. I must admit, the second time I saw the episode post-Ferguson, I had kind of a different take on it. The policeman did nothing wrong.
Yeah,
the policeman
same.
Actually,
same.
He was pretty. While he was kind of hard fast with the guy. He wasn't too. I mean, he certainly wasn't physical or anything like that.
Yeah, he wasn't defensive with him and didn't try to really get in his face. But I absolutely agree. I think the first time we saw that episode, I was like, "Shut up, you little shitbox! Like, just right. Take the ticket and go back in your house."
Right.
And now it's like, you know, who in that guy's shoes wouldn't be flexing on the situation? Like, I could definitely see his point of view more, but I just didn't find his like lipping off to the cop as, like, I think I thought it was more pointless and dumb than I did before, and I don't think that guy was even drunk. Actually,
no, I don't think he was that drunk. I do remember it was either this episode or one of the other few episodes that actually had someone of color in it, where you also had one of his friends going, "Just shut up and take the ticket. Just shut up and take the ticket," kind of thing. Which that kind of attitude takes on a different meaning to me today, than it used to.
Absolutely.
Of course.
So yeah, I guess we accidentally did get a little heavy.
Well, believe it or not, you can learn things from campus.
With this
CD.
Light and fluffy show about blithering drunks with boot chunks on their Oxford shirts. For an example of the kind of thing that you're generally dealing with, both stupid student-wise and patience of Job cop-wise, let's go to Conway, Arkansas for this clip.
All right. What I want you to do is I want you to lift your foot up. Just like this, look down at it and count like this. 1,000, 2, 1,000, 3, 1,000, until I tell you to stop, okay?
Can I ask for a lawyer to be present at this point?
We're just having you do tests.
Can I ask for a lawyer to be present at this point, sir?
Here's what's going to happen. If you do, basically what we're going to do is we're going to take you down to jail for suspicion of DWI. And then you need to perform a breath test, okay? So, I mean, it's your decision. I'm giving you a chance to not go to jail tonight.
No, yes, sir.
Okay. So what do you want to do?
I don't want to go to jail. I just don't.
I smell alcohol coming from you, Brad. I want to know how much you've had. And by knowing how much you've had, I'm doing these tests.
Why don't you, like, get your hands off your pockets real quick, okay? You got anything on you that's going to be illegal or anything like that?
No, sir. No,
why don't you keep your hands out of your pockets for me, okay?
Not at all.
Just put them on your chest right there. Just, like, you're giving yourself a bath or something. You mind if I check your pockets?
No, sir, not at all.
I just see you keep grabbing your pockets, so I'm just making sure you don't have anything on you.
Are you just nervous? You're turning white as a ghost, and you're starting to sweat.
You're fine.
You good?
No, sir, I'm nervous.
All right.
I'm not going
to
lie.
So do you want to continue the test, or do you want to just go on down to the police station?
I'd rather not go to the police station, but I'm not going.
Then you have an opportunity to do the test.
I'd like to talk to a lawyer.
Okay. That's why I said, go put your hands behind your back. Okay.
Just, you can't, unfortunately, this is not a video podcast, but the cop at this point is like, all right, we're good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that right there encapsulates everything that Campus PD is about. You are immediately, as a viewer, your life is much improved because you realize you're not that guy. Yeah. Whoever that guy is on the show just looks awful. He just looks so stupid.
Well, my favorite is, like, there's that girl, they're trying to clear off some parking lot party, right, and she's like chanting Attica or something like that, and then she's like being real rude to the cop who's actually trying to interact with her, and then quickly realizes that she's beyond sense, and like gets her down on the ground, just like twists her wrist and gets her down on the ground. And she goes from being real brave to like, ow, later, ow, ow, police brutality. And I'm just like, you don't know police brutality. Like, you have a sparkly phone cover. Give me a break.
Right. Right. Yeah. It is pretty amazing. So it's always fun to watch because you just have this sort of sense of like, okay, I'm going to see someone who's going to make me feel much better about my life go through something right here, but no one's going to get really hurt, and usually I'm going to hear a great comeback or two from a policeman.
And so, yeah, it really is delightful. They have great timing, like when they just sort of cut a side eye at the camera sometimes, like, but it also gives me some faith, like, not in law enforcement necessarily, although it is nice to know that after, like, night after night of this shit in Tallahassee, that they just haven't started like flash banging the entire campus in a frustrated rage, but that they can, I sort of feel inspired to put up with all the annoyances in my own life by the fact that these cops are like, okay, like someone like dumps out in the back of the squad car and the guy's like, okay, well, we're also going to need an ambulance for me. And right, some Windex. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those law enforcement shows that, like, it's really never going to be that depressing. If you are an emetophobe, avoid the Cancun episodes. There is a lot of chundering. It's not cute.
Chundering. I like that verb. That's a very good.
Yes.
Our cats do a lot of chundering.
Yes, I have become somewhat inured to chundering after my own long ago college career. But yes, that's one of the many true crime offerings that Dan and I enjoy, and certainly the least depressing. Inspiring is maybe a little strong, but it's a fun 22 minutes, that's for sure.
It's something that you at the end of, as it happened to us the very first time we watched it, it's someone that it'll be 2 a.m. and you'll look at each other and you'll go, well, let's just watch one more, and you'll keep watching, which is really kind of fun.
And if you enjoy Campus PD, there's a show on, I think also on Spike. It's usually paired with new Cops episodes. It's called Jail. And as Campus PD is, like, they're dealing with all kinds of crimes, but 98% of the shit we see is drunk and disorderly. Jail is the same thing. It's the drunk tank. And these intake officers are fucking hilarious. They're just making fun of these people, probably correctly. And yeah, it's a good time. Some witty repartee and a lot of people lighting the wrong end of cigarettes inside jail where you're not allowed to smoke. On that note, Dan, we've broken your previously .tv podcasting cherry. Welcome to the club.
I know. Well, thank you very much. And thanks for having me on as a guest. I appreciate it.
Everybody, next week, we will be greeting Kevin Smokler, the author of Brat Pack America, to talk about casting JonBenet and his grand unifying theory of unsolved mysteries. Until then, this has been The Blotter Presents.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.